The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 18, text number 66, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on May 25th, 2014, in Austin, Texas, USA.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sarvadharman Parityajya. Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. Aham tvam sarva papevyo moksha yeshyami ma suchaha. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The Lord has described various kinds of knowledge and processes of religion. Knowledge of the Supreme Brahman, knowledge of the Supersoul, knowledge of the different types of orders and statuses of social life, knowledge of the renounced order of life, knowledge of non-attachment, sense and mind control, meditation, etc. Now he is describing so many ways, different types of religion. Now, in summarizing Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that Arjuna should give up all the processes that have been explained to him. He should simply surrender to Krishna. That surrender will save him from all kinds of sinful reactions, for the Lord personally promises to protect him. In the seventh chapter, it was said that only one who has become free from all sinful reactions can take to the worship of Lord Krishna. Thus, one may think that unless he is free from all sinful reactions, he cannot take to the surrendering process. To such doubts, it is here said that even if one is not free from all sinful reactions, simply by the process of surrendering to Sri Krishna, he is automatically freed. There is no need of strenuous effort to free one from sinful reactions, free oneself from sinful reactions. One should unhesitatingly accept Krishna as the supreme savior of all living entities with faith and love. One should surrender unto him. The process of surrender to Krishna is described in the Hari Bhakti Vilas 11.6.76. Anukuryasya sankalpa patikuryasya varjanam rakshishyatiti vishvaso gotritave varanang tata. Atmanikshepta-karpanye shadvedasharanagati. According to the devotional process, one should simply accept such religious principles that will lead ultimately to the devotional service of the Lord. One may perform a particular occupational duty according to his position in the social order, but if by executing his duty one does not come to the point of Krishna consciousness, all his activities are in vain. Anything that does not lead to the perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness should be avoided. One should be confident, that in all circumstances Krishna will protect him from all difficulties. There is no need of thinking how should one keep the body and soul together. Krishna will see to that. One should always think himself helpless and should consider Krishna the only basis for his progress in life. As soon as one seriously engages himself in devotional service of the Lord in full Krishna consciousness, at once he becomes freed from all contamination of material nature. There are different processes of religion and purificatory processes by cultivation of knowledge, meditation in the mystic yoga system, etc. But one who surrenders unto Krishna does not have to execute so many methods. That simple surrender unto Krishna will save him from unnecessarily wasting time. One can thus make all progress at once and be freed from all sinful reactions. One should be attracted by the beautiful vision of Krishna. His name is Krishna because he is all attractive. One who becomes attracted by the beautiful, all-powerful, omnipotent vision of Krishna is fortunate. There are different kinds of transcendentalists. Some of them are attached to the impersonal Brahman visions. Some of them are attracted to the supersoul feature, etc. But one who is attracted to the personal feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and above all, one who is attracted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Krishna himself, is the most perfect transcendentalist. In other words, devotional service of Krishna in full consciousness is the most confidential part of knowledge, and this is the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Karma yogis, empiric philosophers, mystics, and devotees are all called transcendentalists, but one who is a pure devotee is the best of all. The particular words used here are ma shuchaha. Don't fear, don't hesitate, don't worry are very significant. One may be perplexed as to how one can give up all kinds of religious form and simply surrender to Krishna, but such worry is useless. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Badijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shivishakanvitamsha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Dishatarine. This verse is wonderful. It's really, really wonderful verse. This is the essence of all Vedic wisdom. The Vedas are very vast. It's a whole huge ocean of wisdom. But if you want one verse that you can understand and become perfect in Vedic knowledge, if you can simply understand this one verse, you become a perfect transcendentalist. So then, let us try to understand deeply what Krishna is saying here. Abandon all varieties of religion. Now, how do we know what that means? We have the purport or commentary of Srila Prabhupada, the greatest acharya. Krishna is specifically referring to all the previous methods of elevating the consciousness described in the Bhagavad Gita. Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. He's specifically referring to these other systems. And it also applies to any kind of religion that is materially motivated, because there are verses like that also in the Vedic wisdom. The Bhagavatam, Dharmak Projita Kaitavotra Padamo Nirmatsaranam Sutam Vejam Vastamab Shivadam Matatabo Nanulayam Shimad Bhagavate Mahamane Kitin Kaivara Ishvara Sadhya Rijura Rudnaje Krati Vishu Shushabish Tachana. Completely rejecting all religion that is materially motivated, this Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth, which is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. So, banning all varieties of religion not only applies specifically to the types of consciousness elevation mentioned earlier in the pages of the Gita, it also applies to any type of materially motivated religion that's also rejected, according to Bhagavat philosophy. You may say, but why should I do that? I mean, I prayed to God for a new car and I got it. I mean, why should I give that up? I mean, I like my new car, my Mercedes. I really like it. I prayed for a Mercedes and I got it. And I mean, why can't I keep doing like that? Isn't that good for me? Well, will your Mercedes-Benz save you the time of death, you see? You may be riding very comfortably in your Mercedes-Benz down Metric Boulevard. The time of death, if you're not connected with God, you become an animal in your next life. So what's the advantage of praying for material things? Actually, all our material things will come to us anyway, according to our karma, you see. If you've done pious activities in the past, you will receive wealth, fame, power, all these things will come. According to past pious activities, you were sinful in the past, you'll get disease, you get laid off from your job or so many things, so many anxieties and hassles due to past sinful activities. So what do we have? We all have a mix. Each one of us has a mix. We have pious and impious activities. So those things are going to come anyway. No matter what you do, no matter what you pray for, you're still going to get your karma. So what is praying that actually meant for? What is God consciousness or religion actually meant for? It's meant to get you out of karma chakra altogether. You see? Because there's two energies at work. It's like here we have here in Austin, we have I will describe for you two institutions of the state of Texas. We have the University of Texas here in Austin, one of the major universities in the whole country. Actually, the largest university in the whole United States is right here in Austin. And over in Huntsville, we have another institution called the State Penitentiary, where we have the highest number of executions in the United States. So we have two award-winning or top institutions, the largest student body and the most executions in the United States. They're both state institutions, so which one would you rather attend? Rather attend the University of Texas or the Huntsville State Prison, you see. They're both state institutions. They're both governed by the state of Texas. So you have your choice. How would I like to be related with the state of Texas? You see what I'm saying? So in the same way, you see, God has his spiritual energy and his material energy. Either way, you're related with God. Even if you say there is no God, still you're related with God. You can't escape God. One of our students, he visited his relatives in Delhi, and they said that God's just a hallucination. The soul is a hallucination, and God's a hallucination. And I said, well, ask them, how do you know you're not a hallucination? How do you know that you're not a hallucination? You say God's a hallucination, the soul's a... Well, what if I say that you are actually a hallucination? How can you prove that you exist? Can you prove that you have a tangibly existent? You see? So it's easy to say that God's a hallucination, but the reality is, if you think, you look at it, what does God actually mean? I mean, the word is thrown around a lot nowadays. What is it actually, what are we talking about? What is the concept, you see? God means the origin of all, the fountainhead of all energies, you understand? The source from which everything is coming. So, the atheistic philosophy is, as espoused by Dr. Stephen Hawking, he's the champion of atheism right now on the planet. He says everything comes out of nothing. Now science has realized that everything comes out of absolutely nothing. But where's the scientific experiment, Dr. Hawking, you can do to prove that? Take anything, get me anything out of nothing, Dr. Hawking. Can you produce a blade of grass? Out of nothing, or a glass out of nothing? Can you produce anything out of nothing? Give me one molecule, just give me one molecule out of nothing, Dr. Hawking. But he can't even produce one thing out of nothing, because everything comes from something. So something means God. You understand? God is the original something. So if someone says God's a hallucination, you could say, well, if God's a hallucination, then existence itself is a hallucination. But who's doing the hallucinating then? See, the Buddhists say that it's all a hallucination, and actually there's not even anyone there doing the hallucinating. There's no hallucination. It's all hallucination, and there's no hallucinator also. That's the Buddhist philosophy. It's all void. So who thinks it? Who's thinking it's a void then? If I don't exist, how can I think that everything is a void? I mean, it's ridiculous. According to Buddhism, you see, you don't even exist. I was formerly a follower of that philosophy. I had a song that I sang one time called, it was the hippies loved it. It was a song called "I'm So Unreal." Hey, I'm so unreal, I don't really exist at all. That was my song. The hippies thought it was great. It's just Buddhism, you see. There's no actual, that was my former days before I saw the light and realized I actually do exist. Now I have to come to grips with my existence and how I can make it perfect, you see. But I was going on this, I was so miserable in the material world, I said, well, I can block out the misery by just saying I don't exist. You see, it's an artificial thing. It's just like you're a rabbit, you know, and the fox is coming to eat you, and the rabbit just, he can't outrun the fox, and he just gives up, he closes his eyes, there is no fox, there's no danger, he just closes his eyes and denies it, you see. Well, that's what I was doing, I was denying it. Well, I don't really exist, it's all nothing, it's all void, it's all one, you know, but it doesn't really work. You can sit there and close your eyes at Al-Qaeda is not coming to chop my head off right now. But when they come with their knife and they cut off your head, then your head is cut off, and you know, it's, what can you do about it? Chant Hare Krishna while they're cutting your head off and get out of this material world. That's what you can do. So the point is that we have to understand there is a substance. The existence is substantial, it's not void, there's an actual substance. And that substance is God. That original substance from everything is coming out, that is God. So God does exist. To analyze things scientifically means we have to see there is a source for existence. There has to be a source. That's called Adi in Sanskrit. Adi. And the ancient Sanskrit tells us about that origin. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Vajami. That origin is a person named Govindam, and he's the original person. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Vajami, and I worship him. You see. So what is the advantage then of worshiping that original person as the source of all existence? Well, now you're in harmony. Just like when I was in high school, I was in the Westbury High School Orchestra. I played the violin. And then I played good enough, they put me in the All-City Orchestra also. So I played in two orchestras. The Westbury High School Orchestra and also the Houston All-City Orchestra. And so what we did each time we played, the first violin player, you see, he actually had a Stradivarius. His father was the head conductor of the city of Houston. He had a Stradivarius, which is a really top-class violin. But he would play his Stradivarius violin a certain note, and we would all tune to his violin. Every instrument in the whole orchestra would tune to his Stradivarius violin. And that way, we were all in tune with each other, you see. And when the conductor would, then we would follow the conductor, and then we'd make some nice sound, you see, some traditional, you know, classical music, and it was actually sounding pretty good, you see, because we were all in tune with each other. We were tuned to that original, to that middle C, and he tuned his violin to a tuning fork, you see, standard tuning fork. So we were all in tune. So in the same way, you see, life is a big symphony orchestra. And you can be in tune, and it's beautiful, and if you're out of tune, it's horrible. It's horrible. Get me out of here, you see. So if you're ever feeling down and out, if you're feeling miserable, depressed, greedy, lusty, you're going to cover any kinds of material contamination. You simply have to understand you're out of tune, that's all. You're simply out of tune. And all you have to do is to taste the bliss, to be back in harmony with God, with Krishna, with Govinda, is get yourself back in tune. So this, how do you get in tune? There's different tuning methods described here in the Bhagavad Gita. Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. But Krishna says, actually, give up all these other tuning methods and just surrender. This is the easy way, you see. The other tuning methods take a long time. This is described in the Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, text number 34. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, only the tip of the toe of whose lotus feet is approached by the yogis who aspire after the transcendental and betake themselves to pranayama by drilling the respiration, or by the jnanis who try to find out the non-differentiated Brahman by the process of elimination of the mundane extending over thousands of millions of years. So there are other tuning processes. You see, the yogis, the Ashtanga yogis, but it takes thousands and millions of years of doing of the pranayama for many lifetimes. The yogi doesn't make it in one lifetime. They actually slow down their breathing and they live for even 300 years sometimes. You ever been to Kumbh Mela? Huh? There are yogis there, many centuries old, who come down from Kumbh Mela, from the Himalayas. They're centuries old. They're back from the days of British rule, or even maybe even Mughal rule of India. They go way back. And they come down to Kumbh Mela, but still they're not liberated yet. And they'll have to come back again many, many times as a yogi to achieve perfection, thousands and millions of years by that yoga system. And what do they achieve at the end? Only the tip of the toe, they approach the tip of the toe of the Lord. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakura explains what that means. The precincts, in other words, they're out in the suburbs. They haven't crossed the city limits. They're outside the city limits. He explains, they're the precincts of the Lord's lotus feet. They don't actually even touch Krishna's feet. They're just in the neighborhood, but they're not quite there yet. They're outside the city limits, you see. Like here you can be in this Austin city limits or outside the Austin city limit. Well, they're outside of the limits, the city limits, the jnanis and the yogis. So therefore, that's why Krishna says that even though these other processes work, they're very slow, they take many lifetimes, and there's many dangers along the way. Just finish it up right now and surrender to me. And immediately you can achieve perfection right now. You see? I will now deliver you from all your sinful reactions. Now each one of us has, each one of us has our own stock of sinful reactions. I did some dirty things in the past, you did some nasty things in the past. You see, we did some impious things, and we suffer because of them. But when you surrender to Krishna, moksha yashami ma shuchaha, I'll take it all away, you see. It's like he had a horrible criminal record, but the governor said, "Hey, I take it. I clean, exonerate. Now you have a clean record, no criminal record. I just take it all away. I wipe. Now you have a clean criminal. Your criminal record is finished. You did meritorious work. Your criminal record is finished. Now you're free. You're scot free of all your karma. Now you're clean. You see. So if." No matter what abominable activities we have done, even just like we sing in our Tulsi prayers, Yani Kanicha Papani Brahma Hitata Kanicha. Even if I kill a Brahman, even if I murdered a Brahman, I can become free of that sinful reaction, you see. So it doesn't matter what we may have done, just surrender to Krishna and It's lifted off of you. All that huge burden is lifted off. And now you can just chant and dance in ecstasy. Taste prasadam, sing and dance. Relish the bliss of Krishna consciousness. Be happy, make others happy, and live a wonderful life as a liberated soul. Iha yasha harer dashe manasa karmana manasa gera nikala svapyavastaso jivan muktaso uchite. One who engages fully his mind, you see, mind, body, and words, karmana manasa gera, his body, mind, and words in the service of the Lord, he becomes a liberated soul, even in all conditions of material existence. Even if you have to go to work on Monday morning, you can be a liberated soul. You don't have to be a yogi in the Himalayas, or somebody sitting on the beach chanting Om on the mountaintop, watching the sun come up. You can even go to work on. You can even go to the office on Monday morning, be a liberated soul at work. Can you imagine going to work on Monday morning at IBM Corporation as a liberated soul, not touched by the modes of material nature? You see, that's Krishna consciousness. This process is very powerful. This process is very effective. This process is very, very potent. And it actually does the job. It does the job. It works. One simply has to hear from the spiritual master, hear from the Vaishnavas, hear from the scriptures, and with full faith. You see? That faith is a very important thing. We hear with full faith. Yasya deve para bhaktir tata deve tata guru tasyaite kyatita yata prakashante mahatmanaha. Only unto those who have unflinching faith in the words of Guru and Krishna are all the imports of Vedic knowledge revealed. So simply, you don't have to be a big, big scholar. You don't have to, it's like, you know, I'm not a big, big scholar. I'm not a Sanskrit scholar. I took a semester of it, but it was pretty bewildering. I'm not a Sanskrit scholar. I can recite a few shlokas with a Texas accent. But yet, because I have faith, I have complete faith in the words of Krishna and the words of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Therefore, I have a very clear vision of what is the Vedic wisdom, what is the essence of Vedic wisdom, what is the perfection of Vedic wisdom, how the Vedic wisdom can actually solve every problem of every man, woman, and child on this planet, individually and collectively, you see. My spiritual master has blessed me with that vision. Just because I have some faith. I mean, faith is there anyway. It's a matter of where you're going to put it. Don't you have faith when you get on an elevator and the cable's not going to snap? Or have faith when you get in your car that somebody didn't plant a bomb in the ignition and you're going to blow yourself up when you turn the key? You have some faith. Well, it was in the garage. I didn't hear anybody fiddling with my car last night. And I have faith. We have faith at every minute. You have to have a lot of faith to get out on I-35. Isn't it? I mean, people are killed every day on these. You see that sign there? This year so far, 1,130 people have died on Texas highways. You see that sign there? Little sign on the. And you come north on I-35, a little sign that tells you how many have died so far. What's the latest body count from the Texas highways, you see? 1,000. So you take your life in your hands. Sometimes the highway is for gamblers. You take your life on your hands every time you get out on I-35. It's a fact. But I have faith that, well, Krishna can take me whenever he wants. See, there's a very nice verse in this connection. Mare Krishna Rake Kre, Rake Krishna Mare Kre. If Krishna wants to kill you, nobody can protect you. And if Krishna wants to protect you, nobody can kill you. So I have faith that I can just go about my regular duties, you know, whether it's earning my livelihood or preaching, whatever it may be. I can go about my regular activities without being in a state of fear. Because when Krishna wants me to go, hey, fine. And if he wants me to stay, fine. But it's his choice. I have complete faith that Krishna loves me He knows, he has complete control of everything that's happening around me. I don't have to worry about it. Whatever Krishna wants is fine with me. He wants me to die right now, I'm ready. Take me. I'm praying to Krishna right now. If you want to kill me right now, I'm ready. I can die right now on the spot. One of my godbrothers is giving a lecture. He actually died. He died in the middle of a class. It happened. He was talking some very high level philosophy from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and boom, finished. So, you know, what a way to go. Absorb in high level philosophy, Vedic philosophy, it'd be a great way to leave your body. Yeah. Guaranteed, you know, liberation. But so the thing is, we should just be really transcendental to this material existence, because it's not really our eternal realm. It's not our eternal realm. There's a much higher place where we actually belong. We're stuck here because we made some stupid mistake in the past to try to imitate the Lord, so now we're here. But just like when your sister left her body, and we had that cremation there on the bank of the gym. Remember that? It was very intense, wasn't it? Intense experience. She's also my disciple, Lalita Devi Dasi. Very good disciple. But it was really a stark reminder that we were in the most holy place in the universe, the bank of the Jamuna, cremating her body. And he really had a strong sense that she was, you know, that body was not hers. That body was just something she was using in Krishna's service. And now she's gone to a very wonderful place because she died in a state of Krishna consciousness. So the point is, we just have to always be Krishna conscious. To train ourselves always to be Krishna conscious, never to become overwhelmed by material modes of nature that pull us in this way and that way. Always be in Krishna consciousness. There's nothing else really worth it. Any other consciousness you may cultivate is just not worth it. We should focus on just being Krishna conscious. I really liked what Prabhupada said here, the last purport. I just went, wow, this is really something. I haven't read this verse in a long time, and I was completely blown out of the water, actually, to be honest, when I read the first sentence of the last paragraph. Prabhupada is saying, one should be attracted by the beautiful vision of Krishna. That's amazing. In other words, you should be able to look at a deity of Krishna or a picture of Krishna, and you should be attracted by that. One should be attracted by the beautiful vision of Krishna. So, am I attracted or not? You can analyze your own position in spiritual life. When I look at a picture of Krishna, am I attracted, or it's just like, oh, okay, there's a picture of Krishna. Or I go, oh, wow, look at Krishna. Isn't he beautiful? Isn't he amazing? You see, are you attracted to a picture of Krishna? A deity of Krishna? You see, we can analyze. This, you want to know, you want to do your own litmus test of where you're at in Krishna consciousness? Mm-hmm. You see? Look at a picture of Krishna and see if you're attracted by the beautiful vision of Krishna or not. If you're attracted, then you're in good shape. If you're not, you got to do something because you're not properly fixed in Krishna consciousness. If you're Krishna conscious, you'll be attracted as soon as you see a picture of Krishna. I remember when I was and in my old days, I was a hippie singer-songwriter in Berkeley, and Mukhanal Das Brahmachari, and he was preaching in Berkeley, invited me. He said, come with me. We're going to spend the night at the temple in San Francisco. Why don't you come with me? I said, okay. I went to the temple, and we slept in the basement underneath the temple room. We got up in the morning, and they had a special set of a peg on the wall for guest beads. So I had chanted my first round of japa on the guest beads. And then the brahmachari said, he showed me a picture of Krishna on the wall. He said, you know, just like you're attracted to a woman, he said, you can be attracted to Krishna. I was going, what? But I was thinking, well, that's pretty cool, actually, you know. Because I could understand what it means to be attracted to a woman. Then in the hippie movement, we were all just completely nuts over, you know, this whole thing, men and women. But And now he's telling me I should be attracted to Krishna. Like that. It's like, wow, to just be relishing and seeing his form. And it was pretty, I was fascinated by that concept. And I actually chanted that around the japa, and I never experienced anything in my life like that. I headed back to my singing, songwriting stopping grounds on the Berkeley campus that day, but as I was leaving San Francisco, I was actually in a state of euphoria, having chanted, spent the night at the temple, chanting the round of japa. It was amazing. I was actually just laughing in ecstasy as I was heading back to Berkeley. I was really blissful. So, being attracted by the beautiful vision of Krishna, it's a very important thing. And maybe I can squeeze a few questions in here. I've gone a little over time. Are there any questions? Yeah. What religion do I belong to? Yes, you can answer it a number of ways. I can give you a number of options. Depends on the mood of the person, the you know where they're coming from. You have to judge according to time, place, and circumstance. But there's a number of ways you can answer it. One way is you say, well, actually, this is not a correct... Your question is not actually correct. Because no such thing as different religions. Religion is a Sanskrit... I mean, a word coming from Latin, which means to relink with this... To relink. So the process of relinking with God is one process. There's no question of which religion. The real question is, are you religious or are you not religious? That's the real question. And I'm trying to be. I really am not religious, but I'm trying to be. I'd like to be. Right now I'm pretty materialistic. I'm just thinking of satisfying my senses. But I really like to be religious. I'm trying to be religious, you see. I'm trying to be relinked. Religio. Relinked. I'm trying to relink with the Supreme. So which religion do I belong to? There's no such thing as different religion, sir. That's really the best answer. Or you could be a little, you know, you could, from different angles, you could say which religion you belong to. I belong to the religion of reconnecting with God. You could say that. That's another way of saying it. The similar thing, but in a different way. Maybe not quite as heavier, as abrasive, a little more mellow. You know, yeah, I've on the religion of reconnecting with God. Or, if some atheist, they're kind of like an atheistic person, you know, doesn't like the word God, like, sends shivers up and down their spine. My religion is reconnecting, the religion of reconnecting with the absolute source of all the energies. Yeah.
Know who you are and be who you are.
Hmm? Ah, yeah, that's another good one. No, my religion is know who you are and be who you are. Would you like to know who you... And then you say, you put it on them, would you like to know who you are? You see? My religion is know who you are and be who you are. Would you like to know who you are? If you like, I can tell you who you are. And you explain to them, you're actually not your body, you're an eternal spiritual being. Because of a foolish mistake you made, you've ended up in the cycle of birth and death. And I can teach you how to get out of the cycle of birth and death if you're interested. Or if you don't have time for a 10-minute lecture or a 10-hour lecture right now, I can give you this book instead. You can take it home and read it. You see? Or I can give you a 10-hour lecture if you're ready for a full mini course right here on the spot. I can give you a 10-hour lecture on it. But just take the book home. It'll save your time and mine. You see? Questions, Mark?
I'm sorry. What I was trying to say is the secret to getting rid of the cycle of life and death,
yeah,
is that belief in God, or is it belief in God and surrendering to God, or is it about getting rid of all the negative emotions and the vices?
It's actually all of the above. Because wherever your love goes, that's where you're going to end up, you see. Right now, our loving tendency is reposed in this body and those who are related with our bodies. That's where our loving tendency goes. But that's not the real self. The body is the covering of the actual soul. Your soul is actually an atma. The atma is 1/10,000 the tip of a hair. It's seated in the heart of your body right now. This body is not you. It's just like a car that you're driving around right now. So if all your affection goes into that body, those who are related with your body, that sort of a mentality will keep you going from one body to another, another body, another body, another body, life after life. When you actually understand that I'm part of the Supreme Person of God Himself, and my true happiness is to have a loving relationship with Him, and you focus your energies then on reviving your loving feelings for that Supreme Person, then that will actually liberate you. That will automatically free you from all the negative energy. That will automatically liberate you from the cycle of birth and death. That will automatically give you knowledge of God. That will automatically make you naturally surrender to Him, just like Arjuna surrendered to Krishna. Once you understand who God is, you'll naturally want to serve Him. You'll naturally want to surrender to Him and do what He likes, you see. So it's all the above. But here, the emphasis in this verse is on surrendering. Because right now I may not feel so much love for Him. I'm still infatuated by my serving my bodily desires and serving the bodily desires of my family members, psychological desires also. But by surrendering, which means to follow the instructions given here in the Gita, this is a process of curing me of my materialistic disease, which has kept me in the cycle of birth and death. Just like I have some kind of a bad infection, you see, right now. So I went to the doctor and surrendered. He gave me a bottle of antibiotics, you see. I surrendered to the doctor, and I'm following the instructions. Time for me to take another pill now. So I know that by surrendering to the instructions of my doctor, that this disease I have, this bad infection I have, my lungs, my sinuses, it will go away. So surrender means follow the instructions. So Krishna gives so many instructions in the Gita on what we should do. We should bow down to Him, should offer our food to Him, we should chant His names, we should have a spiritual master, He explains, who guides us how to serve Him. These things are all described in the Gita. So if we actually surrender ourselves to obeying His instructions, then the feelings of love, the knowledge of Him, the love for Him, and the freedom from all of our sinful reactions, it automatically all comes in, and it's a one package deal. This is the nice thing about this bhakti yoga system, is just by surrendering to Krishna, just by following His instructions, everything comes automatically. Even your material necessities. There's no anxiety anymore because you understand ultimately God is providing everything. I just have to align myself with His will and dutifully act, and everything will come materially and spiritually. It's like we're all worried about making a living, isn't it? But actually Krishna controls everything. Even the money is controlled by Krishna. So, and you know, the climate, everything. So if we just surrender to Krishna, that one step solves every problem we have in our life. Doesn't mean I just sit back and do anything. No, we actually then act as a servant of Krishna and do those things that Krishna wants us to do. It's like Arjuna. He surrendered to Krishna and then he went ahead and engaged in his duty as a warrior. He didn't give up his duty as a warrior. He went ahead and did his duty, depending on Krishna for the results. So if you just do your duty, even if there's some anxiety, Arjuna was in complete anxiety. But he realized, let me just do my duty, whatever Krishna says, and then everything works out perfectly. So one may be happy, you may be miserable, you may be healthy, you may be sick, you may be wealthy, you may be poor. It doesn't matter what your condition is. In any condition, in every condition, simply say, okay, Krishna, now I surrender to you. You please guide me. I'm yours. Whatever you want me to do, I'm ready to do. And then as soon as you put yourself in that position, magic happens. Magic happens. It's mystical. Actually, it's mystical. You'll be amazed. It's like the whole world turns into some kind of a... Your whole life becomes like some amazing mystical experience. A never-unfolding, ever more amazing mystical experience. when you take this idea of surrendering to Krishna very seriously. You see, it's a fact. Any other questions? Yeah.
The idea of surrendering, is that just saying I surrender, and or do you have to do certain things like become say initiated or have altar at home and that kind of
thing? Yeah, what Krishna says, the thing is the spiritual master is Krishna's representative. Surrendering means that Krishna means now I will follow the instructions of his representative, the spiritual master. And then the spiritual master then gives you all the details. You see, do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that. Okay, give up your meat. No McDonald's hamburgers. No Budweiser. No Lucky Strikes or whatever they smoke nowadays. No camels. You know, you give up all that stuff and, you know, you do this. You chant Hare Krishna, you eat food offered to Krishna, you bow down when you come in front of the altar, and, you leave your... The first instructions I got were leave your shoes at the door and don't put the book on the floor. Yeah. That was the first instructions I got when I went to the temple. You don't put the book on the floor and leave your shoes at the door. So you learn. The spiritual master teach you, and the devotees also teach you, you see. They're acting as representatives of the spiritual master. So in this way, we learn, and you just follow them, and you become perfect. And you do get initiated. That's part of it. That's now you're making a commitment. It's like I fell in love, but now I'm signed, sealed, and delivered with a marriage ceremony, you see. You see? We're engaged, but now we're going to get married, you see. And this kind of taking shelter is like engagement, and diksha is like marriage. Now you're married. It's even. So you think it over 100 times. You go to get married in this world, but because it's for a whole lifetime. But initiation is forever. So you better think it over 1,000 times before you get initiated. Because wow, now I'm eternally the servant of this person. He's my eternal spiritual master. Life after life, we sing every day, Janme, Janme, Prabhu say, you are my Lord, birth after birth, you see. So when I take a guru, that's really a big step. He eternally, I worship him. When I go back to God, I know, there is my guru, you see. Just like you have Jayapataka Swami, you see, you go back to Godhead. Some of you have me as the spiritual master, you see. You go back to Godhead, there your guru will be, and you know, this is my spiritual master, and I worship him eternally, you see.
What happens when the guru passes away?
Nothing happens. Everything, it's business as usual. Because there's two presences of the spiritual master. His physical presence is called vapu, and his vibrational presence is called vani, the instructions. So Prabhupada said of the two, vani is more important. The vapu of the spiritual master is present sometimes, and sometimes not present. But the vani is eternally present. So when you actually take the spiritual master, it's not just the physical presence, although you take advantage of that whenever you can get it. But the real thing is you take him into your heart. He enters into your heart, and you enter into his heart. You see? And that death doesn't have anything to do with that. Death is just something... Death is something out there on the external plane. You understand? Something out there. Death is in the external energy, but when Krishna consciousness means you now live in the internal energy.
He's saying that.
Huh?
Still, when the spiritual master departs, he can guide us.
The spiritual master, you should cry like a baby.
No.
Huh?
He says he can still guide us from within.
The spiritual master will, if your heart is pure. You can directly hear your spiritual master guiding you within, and previous acharyas. Well, if your heart is pure, you can hear your spiritual master directly instructing you. You can hear Prabhupada directly instructing you. All the way up the whole sampradaya, you can get directions. If your heart is completely pure. But if not, which most of us are in that category right now, we're not completely pure. So what do? We have the books. We have the tape. We always say tapes. No, but the MP, that's the old days. The MP3 recordings. We have the MP3, no more tapes anymore. We still have some, but in the closet, I don't play them anymore. We have the MP3s, we got the writings, You see? So the spiritual master is fully present in his writings and in his the recordings of his lectures. And everything you need to know is right here in Prabhupada's books. The spiritual master is ordering you to read all of Prabhupada's books. I'm instructing you, read all of Prabhupada's books. Because Prabhupada will guide you exactly everything you need to know. So because I'm instructing you to read Prabhupada's books, therefore just by reading them you'll be connected with me. Because you're following my instruction. So in this way, you can always be connected with your spiritual master. Yeah?
No, I'm saying there are lectures also on the online that devotees can download it to hear.
Yeah. You can download lectures and, yeah. See, just like Prabhupada left in 1977, in November of 1977, he left the planet. It was business as usual for me. Some devotees were very much dependent on his physical presence. They were with him. They spent time with him physically. And they were really lucky. But I was also lucky that I hardly saw him, maybe a few times. I was connected by his teachings. So for me, his disappearance was business as usual. I was serving him in separation anyway. And now I just continued doing what I was always doing. So I considered it a blessing that I had learned how to serve him in separation and feel connected with him in separation. Even when I joined in 71, for 6 years he was on the planet when I was his disciple. But I learned how to connect with him without his physical presence at that time. But whenever I could, I would grab it, of course. But it was only for a day or two. Or for one lecture, for, you know, very limited.
Did he initiate you?
Huh?
Did he initiate you?
Yes. Yeah, I have a letter. He wrote me a letter from London. Except I have a letter. I still have the letter. I accept you as my disciple. And he chanted on my beads, and he mailed me the beads from London to Austin. Yeah, I have the beads. I still have the beads he chanted on. Chanted on them every day. He wrote me, I have about 10 or 12 letters that he wrote me also. Yeah, personally wrote me, and I have, you know, I asked him a class, I inquired one time in the class as well, I asked a question in the class. What was that question? Anyway, I'll remember it some of these days. I think I asked him, how is it we're so fortunate to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, to be blessed with this Krishna consciousness movement? I think that was the question I asked him. He said it was Lord Chaitanya's mercy. How is it we are so fortunate to be blessed with this Krishna consciousness movement? And he said, Lord Chaitanya's mercy. That was the one question I asked him in a class one time. Anyway, we'll go ahead and stop here. Huh? Well, it's actually only, my normal lecture is an hour. I've only gone here 53 minutes. So it's not that, it's not outrageous. It's only 53 minutes and 54 minutes and 3 seconds right now. But we'll go ahead and stop here. I got the hint. And we thank you all very, very much for coming today. And please put this on your calendar. We have these programs every week. Please mark it on your calendar and make it a regular part of your life. And we guarantee if you do so, your life will be absolutely sublime. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagavad Gita ki jai.
Yeah, copies of Bhagavad Gita also.
His grace, Shriman Sangha Shanandikai Maharaj ki.
I'm saying so.